Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Kansas Republican Tracy Mann, who joins us to discuss trade policy and the upcoming farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The House Agriculture Committee held a marathon hearing on the future of federal nutrition programs Wednesday. Members from both sides of the aisle used the event to signal their frustration with members of the other party. Democrats argued the bipartisan support of the debt ceiling bill and its increase to the maximum age of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program work requirements was enough of a change and warned Republicans against pursuing cuts to the program in the farm bill. But Republicans pointed to the increased cost of the program following a rewrite of the benefit calculation in 2021 and suggested more reforms should be on the table. Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow says this year's farm bill will need to be written with no new money. Stabenow told reporters Tuesday that the debt ceiling bill claimed savings that could have instead been directed to the farm bill. She also sits on the Senate Budget Committee and said requests for a few more billion dollars from that panel would have been helpful, but now the bill will need to be written within its existing baseline. Among other things, the news means ag group requests for a better producer safety net will need to come from cuts elsewhere in the farm bill. And finally, the Biden administration's dispute with Mexico over genetically modified corn is now on a longer timeline. The U.S. is pursuing a dispute process over Mexico's biotechnology policies, which it announced last week in a progression of a months-long process. The two countries have just under a month to start talking and about 2.5 months to finish discussions. Among other things, Mexico is seeking to ban imports of genetically modified white corn, which it says is in efforts to protect the cultural and dietary heritage of the country. The U.S. also alleges Mexico is blocking approvals of new seed traits. If the countries can't reach a mutual agreement, the U.S. has the option to request a panel of judges take the case. We started our conversation with Kansas Republican and House Ag Committee member Tracy Mann by asking him just what's at stake in these talks.
A lot's at stake. The whole thing's infuriating to me. And, you know, credit our ag negotiators, Greg Dowd, Ambassador Lighthizer at the time, and C.J. Mahoney, who negotiated the USMCA in the first place. And now you see what the Mexican government's doing, not allowing our corn. To me, they should follow the science, not the political science, but the real science. There's no way to justify this. I think the administration ought to be putting more pressure on the Mexican to receive, you know, this corn. It's safe, obviously, and we need to move on from this.
I want to talk about the farm bill. In the Senate this week, the committee chair over there, Debbie Stabenow, said no new money for this farm bill. And that was kind of her final verdict. Is the House operating under the same assumption?
We'll see. You know, the debt limit vote that happened last week kind of started to set them top lines. There's a lot of conversation about that as well. That's probably a safe assumption. But we will see as we get farther into it.
What does that ultimately mean? Because you're hearing a lot of the same requests your colleagues are about requests for a stronger safety net for producers as a part of this next farm bill. What does a lack of new money mean for those requests?
Nothing changes because at the end of the day, my highest priority is crop insurance. And I hear that repeatedly from producers all over Kansas, all over the country. So protecting, maintaining, strengthening crop insurance still, in my view, is the top priority for our ag producers and making sure we get that right in this farm bill.
Wheat farmers in your state and across the country have been pushing for an increase in the reference price within the price loss coverage program. Is that something, you know, what do you say to folks that are looking for that?
I'd like to see that as well. And I think we got to remember the reason that farm bills are five-year bills is so that they can reflect the times and change with the market. And it's clear, you know, where those reference prices are today versus where the market is, does not make sense. It does not reflect what input costs are in production agriculture today. So that's why we do five-year bills to take a look at these things. I'm optimistic that we can get something done there. I'd like to see it, but we'll see what happens with the top lines and the overall budget.
So if you are in that limited budget environment that we're discussing here, where does that money come from to increase the reference price?
We will see. I mean, you know, the changes that were made to our food nutrition programs by increasing work requirements for work-capable able-bodied adults, you know, changing those ages, you know, that potential will free up some monies. So that's one of the first things I think to be looking at. How does that score? What does that look like? So we look at how do we get some, you know, monies there. I would argue there's probably enough money in the overall bill. It's a matter of how do you allocate within that to make sure the producers are able to succeed and thrive moving forward.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Tracy Mann right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. The House Freedom Caucus has been involved in the farm bill going down twice on the House floor over the course of the last decade. But Congressman Tracy Mann says he believes it's possible for the legislation to gain the caucus's support.
I'd like to think that members, all members of the Republican caucus will agree and like what they see in this farm bill. But, you know, we don't even have the text yet, so we're going to have to get farther into it to really know that.
Is it possible for you and your colleagues to write a bill that would get the support of the Freedom Caucus and enough House Democrats?
I think so. I think potentially. I really do. So, you know, we have thin margins in the House. We all know that. Thin margins on the Senate as well. You know, very thin margins between Republicans and Democrats. So we've got to write a bill that appeases, pleases a lot of different groups. And that's what we're in the middle of right now.
Looking at your home state in particular, long-running drought there, been very devastating for a lot of producers in that neck of the woods. As you look at the functionality of the existing farm bill programs, has that been enough in this situation, or does that contribute to your thoughts on a potential permanent disaster conversation in the farm bill?
Well, and I think that's we're absolutely having those conversations for this farm bill. And I would argue likely we'll save money in the long term instead of having these ad hoc emergency programs, looking at some more permanency to those things. Are those things enough in Kansas? It really depends. For some producers, yes. For some producers, no. But all producers that I talk to agree that we've got to have a strong, effective crop insurance, a very successful public-private partnership where producers share risks with the government. It's been successful. We need to look at expanding and improving it.
So how do you go about pursuing, you know, maybe less of the ad hoc assistance, but still, you know, moving toward a potential permanent program, but still protecting the existing crop insurance program that's so popular among producers?
Yeah, and then that's what we're in right now. I have not talked to any member in Congress that wants to weaken crop insurance. I think it's all about how do we strengthen it? How do we make it better? But then what are the more permanent programs? What does that look like? It's just too early to say. The House Ag Committee is receiving any changes to the legislative text. That will then get combined, acclimated, if you will, and we'll release the text, and then we'll know a lot more where we're at and where members really are so far as their priorities and potential changes they'd like to see made.
Committee priorities due to the House Ag Committee this week, and last year and in some of the years previous, we saw a lot of debate about price discovery within the beef cattle sector. I know there's a lot of beef cattle in your neck of the woods, but now we've seen kind of a point in the cattle cycle, live cattle prices are higher, packer margins down a little bit. Do you think that changes the context headed into the farm bill to where maybe those price discovery conversations don't happen in the legislation, or do you expect that push to continue?
I think it'll be less of a push. But I think you can look at the market and see the market's working. And when you see where fat cattle are and you see where prices are, there is a price discovery mechanism. We got to make sure that we don't punish our producers that have made a lot of investment in improving the product. You know, the reason our ag exports are up, the reason the beef demand is up is because the product tastes good. And the reason that is because we've rewarded producers for their improvement of the product. We got to make sure that doesn't change with any policy that comes out of Washington, D.C.
Well, talking about policies coming out of D.C., and as we mentioned earlier, priorities due to the House Ag Committee this week. What in particular is going to be Congressman Mann's top line priorities?
Yeah, so my top three priorities will be crop insurance, you know, changes, improvement, tweaks we can make there to strengthen the program. Others are MAP and FMD. You know, you look at the return on investment For those taxpayer dollars as we are expanding and growing markets, huge return on investment for producers. Thirdly, oversight. You know, how do we make sure that we are delivering these programs effectively? And then lastly, I think we need to look at ag research. And, you know, look at the dollars that we spend in ag research, what that return is, how we can continue to make appropriate investments there to make sure that we're stewarding taxpayer dollars well.
Congressman Mann, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the last chapter of our Farm Bill Focus.
The 12th and final title of the Farm Bill is the miscellaneous title. Many programs started under the miscellaneous title and moved to other titles once becoming more established efforts. Several livestock programs are included in the title since the 2008 Farm Bill was the last legislation with a specific livestock title. Those programs include the National Disease Preparedness Response Program and the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank, which were both added in the 2018 Farm Bill. Title 12 also includes support for beginning and socially disadvantaged producers and other language for veterans. The title also includes USDA's organization. Occasionally, Congress will create new USDA offices, such as the Office of Urban Agriculture and Innovative Production, and a Food Waste and Reduction Liaison that were both created in Title 12 of the 2018 Farm Bill. If you're interested in learning more about any other of the Farm Bill titles, you can watch our previous Newsmakers episodes on our website at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We're going to continue our discussion on the future of federal nutrition programs with a focus on Wednesday's House Agriculture Committee hearing. And we're joined this week by Ellen Vollinger with the Food Research Action Center and Angela Rashidi with the American Enterprise Institute. I appreciate both of you taking the time. And Angela, going to you first here today. You were one of the witnesses at this week's Marathon House Ag hearing, somewhere over the neighborhood of 4.5 hours that get together took. And one of the things that you discussed was the health component in SNAP and some goals that you think Congress might pursue in that area. But that always gets into a tricky debate about whether or not pursuing goals in that area might also restrict some of the purchases that recipients can make. So in your mind, how does Congress go about kind of threading that needle between encouraging health but not being overly restrictive on food choices?
That's a really good question because, I'm kind of a limited government perspective type person. So it certainly makes me somewhat uncomfortable when government is telling people what to do. But in the end, I think that we are facing such a health crisis related to poor diet quality. And this is an issue that's not unique to just SNAP participants. This is kind of a population-wide problem. But the problem is so severe and so harmful to the health of all Americans that I think when we have a government program that the goal of the program is to improve nutrition, and it clearly is not improving nutrition, we have to take steps such as restricting what people can purchase in order to have the better outcomes of positive health and all of the added benefits that health can provide for people. So I'm much more comfortable in the government restricting what can be purchased than maybe I would be in other contexts.
Well, and a lot of talk at Wednesday's hearing about the debt ceiling deal and the work requirement changes for SNAP that were included within it. Democrats saying that they're not really looking to go any further than that. Republicans saying, well, maybe there could be some more things on the table. If the GOP wanted to consider, just strictly from a policy standpoint, and maybe setting the politics aside, from a policy standpoint, if the GOP wanted to consider additional changes on SNAP, what do you think, you know, could or should be on the table?
There's one major thing that is left to be done related to SNAP and employment, and that includes tightening up when states can waive work requirements that are already on the books. In the law, it states that states can waive it when the unemployment rate is over 10%. Or when jobs are scarce. And so the USDA has established regulations kind of defining what that term jobs are scarce means. And there's generally a view that that is too generous to states, and it allows them to waive work requirements when unemployment rates are even below 5%. So Congress certainly can legislate kind of a fix to that problem and set a floor on the unemployment rate and ensure that states are implementing the work requirement as it was originally designed.
Well, and Ellen, let's keep talking about the potential changes that might be coming through the Farm Bill, because Democrats were repeatedly on record Wednesday saying that they would not support a piece of legislation that offered cuts or you know, too big of changes to SNAP. But in the debt ceiling deal, there was this change to the work requirement text, but there was also additional exemptions added to SNAP that the CBO says could actually increase enrollment in the program. And obviously time will tell if the House GOP or if CBO is right on those figures. But I say all of this to ask you, is it possible that the Democratic position and SNAP itself could potentially benefit from some Farm Bill deal making here?
Well, I would say, first of all, FRAC is not a partisan organization, so I don't speak for the Democrats. But I would say for people who care about hungry people in the Farm Bill, their test is going to be whether or not people have the adequate means to afford a decent diet throughout a month and have access to food. We are not going to be interested in conditioning people's food on whether or not they're documenting sufficient hours of work every month. We know that there are labor market issues in the country. We know the country has issues with respect to having enough jobs, enough full-time jobs, enough hours and wages for people to have family-sustaining incomes. And SNAP is really something that's there to catch people when there isn't sufficient opportunities for them in the labor market. We think there are broader things to do in the economy, but within the Farm Bill, people are going to be looking to protect SNAP and to provide more means for people to be able to purchase the things that they want. There's a great interest in people purchasing fruits and vegetables and other very healthy items. $6 a person a day, which is the average benefit, just doesn't do it. And that's why I think you heard so much at the hearing from member after member who was talking about that metric, the $6 a person a day.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Ellen Vollinger with the Food Research and Action Center says despite calls for changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in the next Farm Bill, she's heartened by the lack of calls to split it from the rest of the bill.
Well, you know, I think it's been telling that so many of the Farm Bill stakeholders, including those who are interested in the farm safety net, are talking about the importance of having a safety net both on the consumer side, which would be SNAP, and on the farm side. I don't think there's a big divide among the traditional stakeholders in the Farm Bill. And, you know, you can look to some of the larger farm organizations who are constantly talking about that coalition and the point that this is a safety net for both sides. So to the extent that the country is looking for savings, I think whether they're in the Farm Bill or not, they probably are outside the Farm Bill. This is not a tremendous percentage of the overall budget, the Farm Bill.
I want to circle back to some of the health and nutrition dialogue that we've had in this conversation that has been a kind of a long-running part of the SNAP conversation. As Congress looks to rewrite the Farm Bill, if lawmakers wanted to use SNAP funding to encourage or incentivize purchasing of healthier foods by those that are on the program, from a policy standpoint, what do you think that might look like?
It looks like boosting the basic benefits. We know that when benefits were boosted temporarily during the Great Recession, there is plenty of evidence from the Economic Research Service what the positive benefits were of doing that. When people have more money, they have a broader ability to make the choices that they want to make. There are a lot of people in the country who would like to make the healthier choice. It's important to put that within reach. It doesn't take micromanaging what choices they make for their family. But $6 a person a day, you know, you can't incentivize your way to a healthy diet just by giving them some kind of meager incentive on top of that. They need basic benefits to be much higher. And of course, at rock bottom, we're interested in broader solutions so that people have the income they need.
Angela, I want to wrap up our conversation with you. Obviously, we've been talking so much about federal nutrition programs and SNAP in particular throughout the course of this conversation. But if Congress wanted to pursue welfare reform, you know, perhaps in the Farm Bill, outside the Farm Bill, et cetera, what do you think are some potential avenues that might look like?
Well, certainly there's kind of limited avenues in the sense that most of our safety net programs are disjointed, all in different congressional committees, different legislation. And so there really is a need to kind of take opportunities when they present themselves to address the problems related to employment and health. I do want to set the record straight, however, because this came up in the hearing yesterday about this $6 a day. The average for SNAP participants is actually closer to $8. But regardless, that is an average, and this is a supplemental program, meaning that as people's earnings increase, income in the household increases, their benefits decline. So that $8 a day on average is not intended to cover an entire food budget. So I think that's very important. I think the other kind of point I want to make is that we saw a very large increase in benefits in 2021, 25%. And when you look at the data, it had almost no effect on food insecurity. And we don't have good data on what people purchase. So we don't know. And we also don't know how the Great Recession increase actually affected what people purchase and consume. But my guess is they likely followed the same pattern they always find, which is a large share of SNAP benefits go towards non-nutritious foods.
Well, federal nutrition programs have been front and center in recent political debates. With the Farm Bill reauthorization coming up, certainly no reason to expect that to change. Ellen and Angela, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at the growth of an ag labor program in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Getting enough workers on farms and ranches has been a long-running issue across the country, and many operations turn to the H-2A Temporary Ag Visa program for help. The H-2A program allows American agricultural employers to hire foreign workers temporarily. Since the program only deals with seasonal work, many producers are unable to use H-2A to address year-round shortages. The Department of Labor certified about 370,000 temporary jobs in fiscal year 2022. One-third of all H-2A jobs are in three states: Florida, California, and Georgia. Washington and North Carolina round out the top five. 2022 was a year for growth for H-2A. For example, California gained more than 11,000 jobs year over year, a 35% increase. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer. Seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House Ag Committee meets twice next week, including a Tuesday meeting on USDA's rural development programs and a Wednesday meeting on the research and extension title in the Farm Bill. We will also get a look at the latest round of inflation figures from the Tuesday rollout of the Consumer Price Index. You can stay up to date with the latest as we track the news on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.